This morning, our whole service revolves around one particular book, my favorite summer reading book thus far, called The Book of Delights by Ross Gay. And I found a video clip of him reading one of my favorite essayettes from this. Ross Gay basically took the whole year to get focused on finding delight in the everyday and writing it down, and then transcribed those musings on delight into a book, which is this book that I have in my hands now. We'll be sharing a little bit of that text today. And in just a few moments, I'll be asking you to share your favorite summer reading or picture book, if you have it with you or nearby, or you'd like to just let us know what it is in the chat. But for now, let's hear just a short story from Ross Gay called Tomato on Board.
This one's called Tomato on Board. It's number 80. Tomato on Board. What you don't know until you carry a tomato seedling through the airport and onto a plane is that carrying a tomato seedling through the airport and onto a plane will make people smile at you almost like you're carrying a baby. A quiet baby. I did not know this until today, carrying my little tomato about 3 or 4 inches high in its 4-inch plastic starter pot, which my friend Michael gave to me, smirking about how I was going to get it home. Something about this at first felt naughty, not comparing a tomato to a baby, but carrying the tomato onto the plane. And so I slid the thing into my bag while going through security, which made them pull the bag for inspection. When the security guy saw it was a tomato, he smiled and said, "I don't know how to check that. Have a good day." But I quickly realized that one of its stems, which I almost wrote as arms, was broken from the jostling, and it only had 4 of them, so I decided I'd better just carry it out in the open, and the shower of love began. Before boarding the final leg of my flight, one of the workers said, "Nice tomato," which I don't think was a come on. And the flight attendant asked about the tomato at least 5 times, not an exaggeration, every time calling it my tomato. "Where's my tomato? How's my tomato? You didn't lose my tomato, did you?" She even directed me to an open seat in the exit row. "Why don't you guys go sit there and stretch out?" I gathered my things and set the little guy in the window seat so she could look out. When I got my water, I poured some into the little guy's soil. When we got bumpy, I put my hand on the little guy's container, careful not to snap another arm off. And when we landed and the pilot put the brakes on hard, my arm reflexively went across the seat, holding the little guy in place, the way my dad's arm would when he had to brake hard in that car without seatbelts to speak of, and one of my very favorite gestures in the Encyclopedia of Human Gestures.
I spoke a little bit about the premise behind the Book of Delights by Ross Gay, that on his own birthday, August 1st in 2016, decided that he would try to write a essayette by hand of some delight that he noticed, that he observed, that he would do this every day and then start to transcribe them and bring them into a book. And 102 essays went into the Book of Delights, and there are so many that are wonderful. I hope that you will pick this up, add this to one of your summer reading books.
This one's called The High Five from Strangers, Etc. Today I was wandering the square of the small Indiana town where I gave a poetry reading at the local college. There's these long parentheticals in this book too. A feature of the small town Midwest, you can relate to this. A feature of the small town Midwest, a city hallish building in the center, always with some sad statue trumpeting one war or another. This one had a guy in one of those not very protective looking hats they called a helmet during World War I. He's carrying, naturally, a gun. Jenna Osman's book, Public Figures, alerted me to the ubiquity of the gun, the weapon, in the hands of our statues. A delight I wish to now imagine and even impose, given that beneficent dictatorship, of one's own life anyway, is a delight. All new statues must have in their hands flowers, or shovels, or babies, or seedlings, or chinchillas. We could go on like this for a while. But never again, never ever, guns. I decree it, and I also decree the removal of the already extant guns. Let the emptiness our war heroes carry be the metaphor for a while. As I was finishing circling the square, I passed a storefront garage with huge Make America Great Again signs. It was a foreign auto repair shop, and inside were mostly Toyotas and Hondas. I settled into the coffee shop where it seemed every other black person in this town was also hiding, every one of us offering each other some discreet version of the greeting. Took my notebooks out, and I was reading over these delights, transcribing them into my computer. And while I was working, headphones on, swaying to the new De La Soul record, Delight, which deserves its own entry, I noticed a white girl. She looked 15, but could have been, I suppose, a college student, standing next to me with her hand raised. I looked up, confused, and pulled my headphones back. And she said, like a coach or something, "Working on your paper? Good job to you. High five." And you better believe I high-fived that child. In her pre-ripped Def Leppard shirt and her itty-bitty Doc Martens. For I love, I delight in unequivocally pleasant public physical interactions with strangers. What constitutes pleasant, it's no secret, is informed by my largish male and cisgender body. A body that is also largish male, cisgender, and not white. In other words, the pleasant, the delightful are not universal. We should all understand this by now. A few months ago, walking down the street in Umberto Day in Italy, a trash truck pulled up beside me and the guy in the passenger seat yelled something I didn't understand. I said, "Como?" The Spanish word for come again, which is a ridiculous thing to say because even if he had come again, I would not have understood him. He knew this, and hopping out of the truck to dump in a couple cans, he flexed his muscles, pointed at me, and smacked my biceps hard, twice. I loved him. Or when a waitress puts her hand on my shoulder, forget it if she calls me honey, baby even better. Or if someone scooting by puts their hand on my back, the handshake, the hug, I love them both. Once I was getting on a plane and shuffling down the aisle, I saw, sitting at the front of coach, reading a magazine, my great Uncle Earl. I got down on my knees and put my hand on his forearm and said, "Uncle Earl, it's me, Russ." He looked at me kind of quizzically, as did the woman traveling with him who did not look one bit like my Aunt Sylvia. Which made me look back at my not Uncle Earl, who looked maybe like my Uncle Earl's second cousin 20 years ago. And though it was benign and no one was hurt, it was a little weird. And they looked confused. All the same, given his Uncle Earl died about 6 months later, I'm delighted I got to see him and touch him gently, lovingly, about 1,000 miles away.
Every night, Violet, the pit bull, you may have heard me talk about her before, goes from her living room bed to her kitchen bed. Let's see if you can see this image now. I have her there. She sits in the center of it, waiting to be given her many night pills in this glob of peanut butter, and then to be methodically swaddled with this gray blanket you see here. The midline of the large swath of the throw blanket goes over the center of her long back, gracing her head, not completely covering her ears. I hold one side across the front and smooth the other across her chest, tucking it gently under her little belly. She looks up, her tongue often darts out in approval. I kiss her graying forehead peeking out of the equally gray covering and say, "Okay, time for bed." She crumbles herself downward, encased in her blanket, sort of fawn-like in this position. I usually place 2 to 3 soft toys around her head and shut off the light, heading to bed myself. And as I do, I smile every time. Despite the clumsiness throughout the rest of her day and sometimes my own, we have this moment of mutual attention through touch. I can't help but be overtaken each time with amusement over the neat precision of her final movements of the evening and my participation in them. Have there been nights she and I would have both fallen asleep without this ritual? Yes. Is it really a necessary thing to do for either of us to get to sleep? Probably not. This is the kind of delight in the mundane that reminds us that there is something pleasing always within reach. Ross Gay calls it the common flourish of love. And like I explained, Ross Gay set out on his birthday, August 1st, to write a delight per day by hand and then transcribe them into a book. And he skipped days for sure, just like I do with Violet's blanket ritual, but found he develops a sort of delight radar, storing up delights as joy after joy called out to him, write about me, write about me. And this became the Book of Delights published last year. What comes together in this book, as others have also lauded, I believe is sacred text, because these are not just any delights or human pleasantries. Ross Gay says, I'm ultimately interested in joy. I'm curious about the relationship between pleasure and delight. He offers a false etymology definition of our origin of the word delight, suggesting it is both of light and without light. And both of them concurrently is what I'm talking about, he writes. What I'm thinking, what I think I'm talking about. Being of and without at once, or joy. For Ross Gay, he is not concerned with the small gratitudes of life's little lovely things. Joy is not the pleasure of a great vegan cake donut, though I love those myself, or musing about a favorite song. Being in joy is not a feeling or an accomplishment. It's an entering and a joining with the terrible. My delight, for instance, in wrapping Violet in her blanket is combined with the sorrow that I know that she is old, that we will not touch in this way always, that Stephanie and my next family dog might not be the type to be swaddled. This joy, this delight is not perfect. It is not forever. None of us are either of those things either. Ross Gay writes, what if we joined our wildernesses together? Sit with that for a moment, that the body, the life might carry a wilderness, an unexplored territory that yours and mine might meet somewhere, somehow, might even join. And it is within that wilderness is there our sorrow. It astonishes me sometimes, he says, no, often, how every person I get to know, everyone, regardless of everything, by which I mean everything, lives with some profound personal sorrow. Is this sorrow of which our impending being no more might be the foundation, the great wilderness? Is sorrow the true wild? And if it is, if we join them, your wild to mine, what's that? What if we joined our sorrows, I'm saying? I'm saying, what if that is joy? Some of you subscribe to my weekly column, Immersed, which comes out every Wednesday-ish. And I have to admit that in the last 4 months of the pandemic, that and daily gratitude practices have not been the magnet for the special little things in life that it was once a year ago. I'm trying to figure out a way to revision, to re-engage with it. And I don't mean to admonish your spiritual practice. If this kind of gratitude practice is getting you through, hear me when I say go and do what gets you through. But for me, the melancholy of these days, the oddest combination of monotony and unpredictability just don't drum up these types of sensibilities so much. But perhaps, as Ross Gay's exercise over the course of a year proves, it's about the discipline. the activity of persistently looking, observing life closely in order to keep ourselves and one another alive. I'd like to keep trying on Ross Gay's delight, marking delights that have happened in the continual communing of terror and love, the thing that makes the intolerable of living worthwhile. The Book of Delights does not shy away from the tension of our social predicaments, the precarity of joyfulness. In an NPR interview about the book, we learn that Ross Gay is writing these essayettes during the 2016 presidential election season and all the dominating events of that year. He's writing, though, about pawpaws in his garden and high fives and tomato plants on planes. He says that you can see that sort of pull in his book to get completely floored by life. He's trying to keep the light. That, he says, is his discipline. Perhaps this is the discipline with which we gather to worship on Zoom each week. We gather to try to keep the light against all odds together, and however far apart we may be, while also being in the midst of racism and violence and capitalism and anxiety and sorrow, joy and terror, sitting side by side. When I think about the uprising across our country against police violence and racism that we're a part of now, in the midst of a pandemic, is that joy? Is that tugging toward collecting delights that live in simple human interactions that are not so simple for some of us anymore, and for many in our country never have been simple, if simple equals privileged, insular, white or able-bodied or cisgender or wealthy living? There's one essay called The Sanctity of Trains. I love this essay in particular as it reminds me of my frequent Amtrak rides at all hours of the day and night between my parish internship in San Diego and my girlfriend and now wife's house in Los Angeles. Ross Gay writes about the people leaving their bags or their belongings on their seat for a stranger, another person on the train to watch. Amtrak trains being imbued with this trust that people will watch over each other, not take things that don't belong to them. And here is how he ends that essay. I suppose I could spend time theorizing how it is that people are not bad to each other, but that's really not the point. The point is that in almost every instance of our lives, our social lives, we are, if we pay attention, in the midst of an almost constant, if subtle, caretaking. This caretaking is our default mode. And he says, it is always a lie that convinces us to act or believe otherwise. Always. Kindnesses we're constantly in the midst of and constantly being lied to about. Keeping the light as discipline. How are we participating in that default mode of subtle caretaking? Where are the reminders, even now, even here in this Zoom-mediated space of love? I'm thinking of Ross Gay's delights, so many of which happened in shared space that we cannot all occupy together right now, as sculptural monuments. His words and lines mold in my mind these public encounters with joy, casting them in glittering bronze, viewable in my mind from a safe social distance, still able to bring happiness. In the current uprising, we are seeing monuments torn down. We are seeing monuments torn down like the one Ross Gay described in the beginning of his essay, "With guns where there should be flowers by his decree." Monuments which do not represent joy, never intended to represent joy. You can see the documentation, the witnessing of their demolishing on a website called whenthecamedown.com, an open source directory of images that seem to heed Gay's call that these were intended to reflect the values of a public space, often about who ought to feel comfortable or safe to move about there. It's probably safe to say that Confederate statues in front of courthouses were designed to say something to a passerby about who would deserve equal access to justice under the law and who would not. So much of what Roskay writes about is the joy of gesture and touch and public human interaction. And as the psalmist that he is, among many subjects he covers, he has, of course, written not just one essay about monuments, but two. In another place, he talks about our sweet human impulse to adorn statues with flowers or coins or fruit, that we have this shared inclination, a nature to communicate the beautiful and the fragrant however we can, to make of the world a bouquet or a vase. And I leave you with one final image. Alexis Pauline Gums, a U.S. Black feminist scholar and poet, who also happens to be my Facebook friend, found recently on the exterior wall of a Vienna transportation building, this prominently placed billboard in a public square. There was a billboard-sized page from her book. And it's her book, not one on any bestseller list, a book she's of her poetry shaped into prose called Dub, Finding Ceremony. And she posted about it, suggesting it as a monument replacement strategy. I'll share that image with you. And in some ways, I'm sharing this with you not just because of the words and the story that she is telling in her book, but perhaps poetry in public rather than statues and depictions of false heroes, ones we've had across the country, protesters harmed by police trying to take down these monuments, pieces of stone or metal, maybe putting poetry in its place. This would be a monument to put flowers by, to adorn with fruit, to say, yes, this is what we are striving for. This is what our public space values. The billboard ends, we retake the stakes unshaken and shake the breaks, make out the fake, open the ache, taste back our touch. Touch. We may, as Roskay writes, need the reminder through a discipline that caretaking, not murder or colonization or disease, is our collective default mode. We Unitarian Universalists in the struggle for justice and liberation can take joy in this life. No matter what, we can observe it. Use delight as fuel. Be joy. Make love tangible. Join our wildernesses, our sorrows. To touch, as Roskay wrote, lovingly, gently, even at 1,000 miles away.